Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, an album that burns eternally. Mm-hmm. And today, we are going to be donning matching fill jackets and baggy pants to New Jack Swing back to 1991 and the debut album by Jodeci, Forever My Lady.
So you're having my baby, and it means so much to me. There's nothing more precious than to raise a family.
If there's any doubt, don't talk. Just listen.
Mm.
I gotta be honest with you. I lied. If you were waiting for me to drop some old real insider intel about my life just then, my bad. What an intro that would have been to whatever I might have said. And what an intro those exact words made to the debut album from a pair of brothers, the DeGreats and the Two Haleys, the Fantastic Four from Hampton, Virginia, and Charlotte, North Carolina, respectively. The saying goes, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Mm. But Jodeci was nice with the starts. They started as four dudes who drove across country with a 29-song, three-tape demo. They started 1991 strong, releasing Forever My Lady in the spring of the year. They started the album with five buttery, whisper in your ear, make you reaffirm your commitment to monogamy, get up and make you spaghetti, tatch your name on my neck, type black love, until track six and an interlude called Nasty. Then it all went different. They were part of starting a real shift in R&B, from suits to boots, from slow dancing to slow whining. Bad Boys before a bad boy left uptown to start Bad Boy. They were it. Church kids with baseball caps and vocals, whose sound had been crafted by an architect named Devante Swing and a visionary, Andre Harrell, who built his label into hip-hop's Motown. 13 songs, 57 minutes, 32 seconds. That's all it took for the band who blended gospel and New Jack Swing to charm us into their hearts and out of our garments. The album showed the dimension of their persona, wanting to love you for life, but also maybe just for tonight, and R&B's two moods, a sort of sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick for the ballad fans. Shout out to Nice and Smooth. The production and vocals of these four are the reason Doc Martens went urban for a minute. The reason my homegirl went crazy for a minute. The reason why I had a crush on Casey for a minute. The reason why Uptown ran everything for a minute. Why their tenure in the game was hot for a minute. A hot minute. Hot for them, hot for yours truly, and hot for the fans. Let's get into it. Stay. Don't talk. Just listen.
Forever My Lady was the album pick of our guest today, scholar and cultural critic Shauna Redman. She's a professor of musicology at UCLA's Herb Alpert School of Music, where she studies and teaches on popular music, race, and politics. Her first book from 2014 was Anthem, Social Movements and the Sound of Solidarity in the African Diaspora. And she's currently working on two new books. One is Everything Man, about the life and legacy of singer, actor, and activist Paul Robeson. The other is about the phenomenon of aid music. Think We Are the World and Do They Know It's Christmas Time at All? And that one's entitled The Song That Saved the World. Mm. I'm looking forward to both these tomes. Shauna, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you so much.
Given that you are a pop music scholar, if I may say that, I was especially curious about what albums you might pick. And I've seen you lead, for example, a panel discussion about Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, and I would certainly not have been surprised if you had gone with, let's say, a album by Mahalia Jackson or Fela Kuti. But Jodeci and Forever My Lady, I did not see coming, and I could not be more delighted that we're going to get into this. And I need to know, what makes this album a heat rock for you?
There is just so much nostalgia attached to this album for me. And, you know, upon revisiting it and actually putting myself in a material time and location, I'm a little bit ashamed, actually, to announce how invested I was in this album because, you know, I was a a fresh, vivacious 11-year-old when this album came out. And it's wrong. It feels wrong that I should love this album in the way that I do, because I have all of these memories of it as being, you know, very much attached to, you know, certain types of sexualities and imaginations around my sexuality, around my relationship to my peers. And I was 11 years old. I mean, no shame, no shame.
Precocious.
Precocious, to say the least. I mean, to actually go back to the album in kind of a studied way, and it's been a bit of an eye-opening experience, to say the least. But this album, you know, I mean, it still evokes so many deep emotions, and it has some of those jams on it where if you need to get in that mood, you know where to go.
Just where to go.
Just where to go. Which track to play, which two or three to ride out. Mm. And that's part of what I love about it, too. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But it's like the first five, I'm there for it.
Just for tonight, and maybe we can do something like make love, watch the sunrise, or listen to JoJo, Casey, sing us a verse.
We were talking about this before we taped, and I've said this on previous episodes. So, you know, I just have to cop to the fact that in the early 90s, I had basically hip hop blinders on, which is to say that anything that wasn't in that lane, with the exception of some 60s and 70s soul and funk thrown in, I just didn't really have much time for it. And Jodeci was one of those groups that certainly, like, I knew about, because it was impossible to be listening to any kind of, you know, what was the term, the genre term back then? Urban contemporary radio stations, which was, I was listening to a lot of KML because I was in the Bay Area by then.
Shout out.
And so, yeah, stuff like Forever My Lady, Come and Talk to Me especially, and really the remix for it would get play on the mix shows. So I had cursory intersections with this album, but I never sat with this at all. In fact, I don't think up until this past week, I don't think I've ever sat with any Jodeci album in its entirety. So it was fun for me to revisit this era. I was a little bit older than 11. I'll use Morgan's line to say, I won't say how old, but but it does remind me of just what the sound of R&B was like in the early 90s. And Jodeci, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, as kind of one of those acts that was part of the New Jack Swing era. And we've talked a lot about New Jack Swing on this show. There's some of it that I could kind of get into, and a lot of it, which just still to this day, as open-minded as I try to be, it's just not my sound. And it's something, I don't know what it is. And this is no slight on Albie Schur or Babyface or all the architects of the folks who put together this particular style. It's Teddy Riley. It's an interesting time capsule, I'll say that much. How about you?
First of all, I have to say, I think it was the warm-up act for What's the 411.
Oh, interesting.
I think it got us nice and ready for Uptown and what Uptown was bringing.
Yeah.
And so my first impressions were, man, this is rugged. Like, this is rugged R&B.
Mm.
And I hadn't seen them, any of the pictures of them, before I heard the jam.
Mm-hmm.
And so this got heavily rotated, and Come and Talk to Me was first. Mm-hmm. Was the first thing I heard on the radio, and was the first thing that was getting bumped. I didn't buy this album, but I heard it a lot. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was love at first listen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, too, there's something very gendered about it, you know? And I think that the kind of aesthetic practice of Jodeci, the boots, the baggy jeans,
yeah,
the baggy shorts that reach your ankles, you
yeah
know, the tight tank tops, et cetera,
oh, yeah,
like, I think that type of stuff was a welcome for men, perhaps, in certain types of ways. But R&B has always kind of appealed to women, perhaps first, right? That's your first audience. And, you know, that becomes disrupted with Jodeci. But I do think there's something to me about having been drawn to it for that reason, right? Because I'm supposed to be, right? That there's a certain pitch toward that type of listening audience. But also something for me about growing up in the Midwest, where hip hop was not as prominent in this moment unless we were pulling from the coasts, right? So we didn't have the Kanyes, the Commons, the Eminems, the folks who were repping hard for the Midwest. So unless we were getting into the Biggies and the stuff like that, which did happen, and I absolutely became a fan, this was really my lane as far as popular music was concerned.
So how did this Jodeci album cross your path?
So Jodeci, I would have heard definitely on the radio, and then purchased the CD as a part of one of those old subscription
Columbia
services.
Columbia House type.
Yeah, where you could get like 50 CDs for a dollar.
Exactly.
So that was part of that collection, but definitely got wore out far more than the other selections.
I wanted to quickly just shout out a couple of the things that came out in 1991, since Oliver asked you what was going on in 1991. And some of the big album chart toppers were Michael Jackson. You mentioned Michael Jackson, Black or White. Mm-hmm. Shanice Wilson, I Love Your Smile. Pebbles, Love Makes Things Happen. Man, BB and CeCe Winans' Addictive Love, Luther Vandross' Power of Love, MC Hammer Adams' Groove. I can't believe that's on there. But Wednesday, Bugsley, Gomez, Fester, man, them some strange neighbors. They do what they want to do, say what they want to say, live how they want to live, play how they want to play, dance how they want to dance, think and they struggle for it.
Do what they want to do. Say what they want to say. Live how they want to. I know.
That was a gem, though. I'm not going to shade. I'm not going to shade Hammer.
For it.
Gerald Levert, Private Time. This was Prince, Diamonds and Pearls. Mm-hmm. Surfaced the first time. And, of course, one of the biggest hits of the year was CNC Music Factory, Gonna Make You Sweat. Mm-hmm. Everybody Dance Now.
Mm-hmm. But I think to your previous point, you look at where Jodeci fits into that constellation of artists. Mm-hmm. And they don't quite fit into any of the boxes that some of those others might. And I really like that term you were using in terms of rugged R&B, because I think until I really thought about it, I always just packaged Jodeci together with all of the other acts from that era. And that goes as far back as like late 80s New Edition to like all the post-Jodeci acts that we can talk about. And mm-hmm. we've talked about Boyz II Men on the show, what have you. But it didn't really dawn on me until today that they really marked a shift in sort of what how R&B looked and how it sounded.
Yeah.
You want to say more about that?
Well, I think for one, the one thing that we've joked about on this show is that pre sort of hip hop R&B, no matter how old the singers were, they all looked 45.
Yes.
It didn't matter how old they really were. Mm-hmm. They looked like your dad. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a part of marketing, that mm-hmm. the urban contemporary was supposed to mean older urban mm-hmm. contemporary. Mm-hmm. And post this hip-hop New Jack Swing era, everybody looked young.
That's right.
Super young. Freddie Jackson had that buttery lighting behind him.
Yeah.
He had sort of like
the finger wave.
Blue sons underneath his his jackets, you know, little candelabra behind them. So you have someone like Jodeci come up, and you like, yo, these dudes have on like, you know, Casey got his shirt open, right. The caps are backwards.
Yeah.
So that was one of the shifts. Mm-hmm. I think tempo was another thing that had to do with it. Although Jodeci was a band, they were a new type of band. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the changes. And like I was saying sort of in the intro, the way that we partied to R&B music was different. Like right. You could get really down and dirty in this time. And before that, if you were doing all that twerking and stuff to Freddie Jackson, someone was going to be like, what's going on with you?
No, it was not for that.
It was not for
it
that.
Was for candlelight.
That's it.
And, you know, sweet dinners.
Right.
And, yeah.
Luther was not for, you weren't moving too fast to Luther.
No.
And so I think that represented the shift. And I think this type of R&B had to walk in the door with hip hop, because hip hop gave it the permission mm-hmm. to be roughneck and to be a little bit thugged out and to mm-hmm. be that secret.
Right.
That secret boyfriend that you bought home, that, you know, and that's what sort of this album felt like to me. When you start off a song, you know, So You're Having My Baby, and it means so much to me. The assumption was that they weren't married.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that was a shift in sort of the morals, that you could talk about it and be like, so we ain't together.
Right.
And I think the genius of Uptown is they capitalized on, look at that family.
Right.
You got Christopher Williams. You got, I think Father MC was on there. You got Mary.
So. Heavy D.
Heavy D. They came out the gates swinging.
Strong.
Selling this sound.
Right.
And Jodeci walked right in. Oh, 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 oh,
there you are again with the same smile each day. I want to know what it is that made you feel this way. I wish I could grab you, tell you what it means to me, to see you walking by the way.
I saw Jodeci's first interview with Donnie Simpson. Mm. And Donnie Simpson probably wasn't that old, but sitting with them and talking to them, he seemed like an older dude.
Mm-hmm. And look, you do look, say, wow, they're rappers, you know. But I'm told that y'all can sing, man. If I ask you to sing something right now, man, it would be like,
want it?
Street corner. Yeah, definitely.
Forever, my lady.
The one for me. Holding me close. She's all I need. When we make love, it's like a dream.
So, I mean, they came out the gate swinging. They could really sing. But you have to see it, because Donnie Simpson, it is like your uncle being like, is that what they doing now? That's those new dances?
He's just seeing the writing on the wall, realizing that his time is
absolutely
about to be up.
And that sort of music had changed. Mm-hmm. He wasn't hating. He seemed very, very enamored of them. Mm-hmm. But it was a sort of a changing of the guard happening right in front of your eyes.
Absolutely.
We mentioned earlier the role of Andre Harrell, who's running Uptown and absolutely deserves so much credit for engineering, you know, this whole movement. But let's not also forget the person, the young intern at Uptown, who was assigned to work with Jodeci as their A&R, young Sean Puffy Combs.
Man.
And a lot of the image, a lot of the styling that went in, the visual components, what I mean, that was a lot of Puffy's innovations. And you can certainly see how you get from that moment in 91 with what Puffy would do with Bad Boy for the rest of the decade. And the DNA is all kind of planted in right here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, there are so many stories about him, you know, getting on the bus, you know, leaving Howard University and going to work and then, you know, doing these great parties. But to your point, he was sort of creating an empire before we even get to Bad Boy in 93. He's already sort of laying the foundation. And he moved right from this sort of hip-hop soul right into Ghetto Fabulous, and he never looked back. So shout out to interns.
Absolutely.
Shout out to
interns. Don't sleep on them.
Don't sleep on interns, paid or not. Shout out to, I need an intern.
I mean, right. He's, you know, he's brilliant in many ways. As we know, but he's also a very crafty mimic, right? So he develops 112 after having worked with Jodeci.
All right.
And 112 becomes kind of a hybrid of the older suited up R&B and this new, you know, kind of roughneck booted type of R&B, because they're kind of doing both at one point. But he had tremendous success with them just a few short years after working with Jodeci. And they have to have played a huge, huge role in the way that he was working that group.
And I did not realize this until now, but one of my favorite things from the 90s, and as a DJ I used to play this a lot, was Puffy's remix Faith Evans's You Used to Love Me from 1996.
Ooh.
And it didn't, I just didn't think about it until this past week. He's basically just redoing his own remix of Come and Talk to Me from 91.
Mm.
So Christian, can you drop the Come and Talk to Me remix first?
I've been watching you for so very long, trying to get my nerve built up to be so strong.
So he
sounds like EPMD, though.
That too.
Yeah.
Right. But I just feel like that he's really bringing it all the way back. I mean, it's only been 5 years, so it's not like a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
But to your point, Sean, about just Puffy being an expert mimicker, like he's great at mimicking himself. And
right.
It's really, it was just revelatory to realize how much he had already been percolating with a lot of these ideas as this early, again, as a random intern, still going to college.
19 years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of that, at the time Jodeci got together, these guys are also 18, 19,
right.
20 years old,
right.
New in the game, you know, church kids, and they built this empire. When you look at that clip, you can tell that they're really young.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to get into this later, but since we're here, let's talk a little bit about the vocals. Let's talk about the difference between Casey and JoJo. Mm. We talked a lot about this as I was listening to it. Everyone chose a side. Everyone had a favorite. And some people thought, you know, you can't see them separately. It has to be them too. I don't know. I felt a little bit like JoJo was like half and half, and Casey was like flavored creamer.
Yes.
One was just a little bit sweeter than the other.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about their vocals?
Yeah,
did you feel like they were pitchy sometimes?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Because confession's good for the soul in here, and I wanted to be able to say that around the supportive community.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. I saw one of the reviews of the album when it first came out. You know, it was the production is brilliant, but the vocals,
really?
You know, someone in the LA Times was like, not so much, but the production, thumbs up. Absolutely, they were pitchy. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think they continued to be, right? When Casey and JoJo broke off, it continued to be kind of a part of their sound. And I think in some ways it worked for me because there was definitely that very clear distinction between the two voices. So you have that variation that's already working to keep the ear kind of bouncing back and forth. But then it was also, I just appreciated the showmanship of a Casey.
Yeah.
You know, it was very clear to me that they had grown up in the church and learning it was a Pentecostal church.
Yes.
You know, that they were used to certain types of call and response traditions that manifested those kind of key signature, ooh, yeah. You know,
yeah.
like those moments in
yeah.
the song. And so I could deal with the pitchiness because he played with the others in ways that I thought was both really brilliant, also really greedy. You
yeah.
know, like he never wanted to step away from the mic.
No.
So whether he was just repeating what you said or he had actually taken his own line, like he was also always in the mic. And so
always.
I think there was, you know, something about that insistence, that confidence, that even with the pitchiness, totally worked for me.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Shauna Redman on Jodeci's 1991 Forever My Lady after a brief word from a couple great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like...
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, mm-hmm. you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
Have you been to MaxFunStore.com lately? Because we've just launched a ton of new merch for a bunch of your favorite shows. You want a patch? We've got it. Tote? Mug? Stickers? We got those too. Heck, we've even got a onesie for your favorite baby. Now is the time to start holiday shopping for the MaxFun fans in your life, including yourself. That's MaxFunStore.com.
We are back on Heat Rocks talking about the debut album by Jodeci from 1991, Forever My Lady, with Professor Shauna Redman.
So a question that comes up on the show a lot is, was the album for you love at first listen to the degree that you listened from front to back? Or did you get stuck on any individual tracks?
I did. I think initially listen front to back just out of curiosity.
Sure.
But my returns to the album have not been front to back, probably ever since. I really get stuck in the first five songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coincidentally, those are the ones that had the most airplay. Those were the singles.
Yeah.
But I think there's also something else, that this is almost like two different albums to me at that split, you know, because the second half of the album feels very much to me like they're trying too hard. It's taking New Jack Swing to, like, too close to the hip hop end and not doing it successfully. And so I wanted to stay closer to the older R&B end. It's still pushing on all the right edges and boundaries. But the first half to me just feels a little bit more, not authentic, but a little bit more kind of secure, that the footing is more secure. And the types of kind of worlds that they're introducing through the production just seem to me more voluminous than the latter ones. The latter ones feel more formulaic and they're out of their element.
It surprised me. That's a good point. It surprised me when I was looking at some of the personnel, because the second half, you could, if I'd have closed my eyes, I'd have been like, well, the whole second half had to be produced by Teddy Riley.
Right.
Because that's what it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Everything is Rump Shaker with a few verses about being together.
Which I loved, yeah, by the way.
Loved, too. But how old were you when Rump Shaker came out?
Oh, gosh. When was that?
That was like around 92 or 90.
Okay.
Same era. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
man.
12, 13.
Listening to a lot. No judgment in here, though.
Yeah. You know, I used my paper route money and I snuck off to the record store.
Good for you.
My parents. So.
Yeah. The second half was a complete change. I mean, like I said, from the moment they did that interlude, and shout out to interludes because I do love them.
Yes.
But from the moment they did that, the game had changed.
He's in the house.
Yo, what's up, man?
All these fly honeys out here in
40. Same strength.
Yo, where Devontae, man?
Yo, I don't know. He's somewhere kicking it.
Yo, what's up? Later for all that. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to call my girl. Hope you're home, baby. Come on, baby. Please be there.
Yo, hurry up.
And I still wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the real Jodeci?
Well, big difference here, though, is because those first songs through the interlude and then My Phone, track number 7, those are all co-produced with I'll Be Sure.
Mm.
But the back half of the album, this goes to Shauna's point, that's just Devontae Swing. Mm-hmm. He has sole producer credit. So it might be that I'll Be Sure's influence. And of course, I mean, he was already a giant by this point.
Sure.
In terms of I'll Be Sure, I'm saying. So I think losing that, I think, probably explains at least some of the shift in the sound in that back half of the album.
Absolutely.
I wanted to briefly also, since we just brought him up, just touch on Devontae Swing's legacy, because this is someone who I'd never really thought of the name, because Casey and JoJo were the main folks in the group that would have a sustained career, and obviously Jodeci has reformed over the years and whatnot. But besides Jodeci, Devontae Swing, via his Swing Mob, discovered Missy Timbaland in Genuine.
And Magoo.
Okay, fine.
Slash Magoo
too, but mostly Missy and Timbaland.
Sure.
And I just feel like it's not that he's necessarily been written out of that history. It's just we don't remember it because his career did not go in the direction that I'm sure maybe or perhaps he would have preferred. But, I mean, this guy had clearly an ear for talent in
for
terms
sure.
of everything that he touched in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. And I think they all, if I understand the story correct, they all sort of lived in this one house together. And all of those people that you mentioned were sort of in the basement cooking up all this stuff. And it wasn't until they broke out that they sort of became megastars. Obviously, Missy. Missy doesn't show up here, but on Diary of a Mad Band, she's all over that. And that's when that's the first time I sort of heard of Missy and what she could do as a producer. I was like, oh, man. And supposedly she's uncredited on a lot of their early stuff, but she was a part of that too. But he had a nice little soup of producers.
Incredible.
And also thinking about him having, even prior to Jodeci, trying to make inroads with Prince.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right? So he, like you said, he clearly has this ear. He's tuned into the world in ways that are both about what currently exists but what might be. And he's trying to generate kind of linkages and genealogies of his own that I think are really tremendous.
Yeah. If I can just share, Shauna, part of what you're talking about is the story goes is that he drove, and I guess he was he from North Carolina or
Virginia?
He was from Virginia, right? That would make sense with the Virginia Beach crowd. He drove to Minneapolis, to Paisley Park, and tried to get his demo tape to Prince multiple days in a row. And when that just utterly failed, he got back in his car and then drove back. And supposedly this is sort of how Jodeci was born, out of his disappointment. That's when he approached Uptown,
sure,
because he couldn't get traction with his purpleness. So he went with Uptown instead. And I mean, I'm trying to imagine, like, imagine if Prince had actually bothered to, like, give him the time of day,
God,
like how different things could have gone. I'm not sure what that would have sounded like, but I'm open for it, you know.
And why Prince? Was he just a fan, or was, you know, like what would the sound have been
if they had connected? Early 90s Prince.
Early 90s, yeah.
Because we're not talking about the revolution at this point.
No,
is Diamonds and Pearl Prince,
right,
to your point earlier, yeah. I feel like we've already touched on this, but I'm just going to throw it out there is, you know, for an album that is now, what, 28 years old, what's aged better, the dance tracks or the ballads? Not that it has to be an either or, but I mean, you were saying, Shauna, earlier that you feel like the back half, which is much more of the dance stuff, just doesn't really do it for you.
It doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
And I don't hear it in circulation. I mean, like you said, the remixes have been pretty fantastic and pretty prominent, but most of what I've encountered have still been the remixes of the ballads.
Right.
So I just don't think that, I think they were too time specific. They just don't have the longevity.
New Jack Swing didn't age well.
True.
This is not I don't feel like this is a controversial statement. I don't even know why. People can't see me, but I'm saying it like it's like some hot take. Really, I think everyone can kind of agree New Jack Swing didn't age well.
You're throwing down right now.
You're right. Let's get into the tracks, though.
Yeah, let's go for it.
I'm going to go first because sometimes I'm self-absorbed, and I have to say that Stay is actually my favorite. Mm. Not the first one that I heard.
Yeah.
But I love Stay.
Let's try.
Something about that beat, something about the fact that I felt like, and I just said that I didn't know if Mr. Dalvin was singing or anything, but this was one of those songs where I thought, like, everybody's singing on here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was charming, and I liked the vocals.
Yeah.
This was a non-pitchy Jodeci on this track. And what I do miss about the 90s is I do miss brothers talking at the beginning and in the middle of the songs, like stopping to say whatever their thoughts are. So for what it's worth, I want people to bring back interludes and just talking to start a track. Intros and interludes is my thing. But this was my favorite, much more than Come and Talk to Me, which I loved.
Yeah.
But there was something so sweet about Stay.
Yeah, I think it has a really nice bop to it, too. You can just kind of two-step if you're of that.
That's it.
Ilk.
And it's interesting listening to how open and airy it is. The drum programming is pretty minimal. I feel like that same song today, there'd just be a lot more going on, partly the influence of trap and the influence of bounce music.
Sure.
You would just hear a lot more hi-hats and 16th notes. And that was just boom. And then a little flavor sprinkled in there. But yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. They kept
very
it really
simple.
Really, really clean.
Yeah.
Your favorite.
Oh, gosh. My favorite. I don't know. I love those wind chimes that starts Forever My Lady. Mm. I mean, that opening is killer. I mean, returning to the album for the conversation, You and I stuck out to me.
Mm.
You know, that was the song I was still so proud of myself for knowing all the words to. And I think it, you know, it too is sweet, right? But it felt to me like that there was a little bit of more of a stretch on the vocals at certain points for them when they were singing together. And I think it maybe opened them up in a different type of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always interested in the songs that knock but don't become singles.
Mm.
So I usually gravitate towards those.
So You and I.
You and I.
I can just picture like my college, I was going to say ballroom. That wasn't where we were dancing, but it was just a college dance. And the lighting is just, you know, a particular hue. And this would be playing. And you'd have people kind of standing on the walls, trying to like get enough courage to kind of step to who they want to dance to. And this is the exact kind of song that'd be playing.
This is
during
it.
That.
Yeah. This is it.
Dance and that moment where the gaze catches from opposite walls, you know, you and I. Of course. Yeah. It's that type of movie moment.
See?
Well, I think I'm well established for being the most basic. Anytime we have, whether it's between me and Morgan or with a guest, I would just pick the really obvious one. So my fire track is Come and Talk to Me, because it's the one song that I still, you know, that I would have heard back then that I still like writing to. And while I do prefer the remix version that we heard a taste from earlier, because you put Impeach the President drums on anything and I'm with it.
Oh, yeah.
But even the album cut, there is just that groove that we've been talking about. And it's a good, it's a really good hook, you know, come and talk to me. Like, it
yeah,
just, it,
man.
It's a good earworm. And it does have that really beefy bass line.
Oh, which yeah.
Does a lot of work on here.
Yeah. But you mentioned the remix earlier, and the remix was fire
yeah.
on that, too.
So good.
Yeah. They had a lot of good remixes of their songs. I used to like this remix of Feenan.
Mm.
I liked Feenan. Mm-hmm. I liked the song. I just have to say it. Feenan. I like saying the word. But I liked their remix that featured Eric Sermon, because I was an EPMD fan. And I think we have it, Christian, if you could play it.
You got me doing backflips and crazy. What is it? It's something rough enough to start a blizzard.
It must be a rough shape. Sort of dated.
Was that what, 94, 95?
Yeah, 94, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit old school. At the time, it was bumping, though.
Yeah, no doubt.
But it's always those period-specific slang, you know, songs that are like, I love that production, but do I really want to be singing all the words with you right now? I don't know.
You want to say Feenan. I'm going to say Feenan for the rest of my life.
What I want to know is, what do the two of you think of the album's closer, which is a song that I'd never heard until this past week, and it's Cherish, which is their cover of the Association's 1966 hit.
Cherish as much as I do.
And now let's hear Jodeci's. Was not anticipating this. I just thought it was going to be a gospel track, and it took me probably a good one, you know, full minute into it to realize, Wait, is this a cover song of the Association?
Sure.
And I was reading a couple of reviews of the album from the time that were not kind to this. A lot of people did not think this was a good closer for the album,
because
it just seemed to stand out as a sore thumb for them. Mm-hmm. But for me, and you know, look, it's well established, I love a good cover song. And the whole take here, it doesn't really sound like the rest of the album, which is, I think, why people didn't like it. But I just love the idea that they wanted to do Cherish of all songs in this style in 91.
And I wonder whose idea was that. Like, who was like, you know, I've always loved the Association.
Puffy.
But the song comes at the end of the album, but after another one of my favorite songs on here, which is X's We Share.
Mm. Mm-hmm. We watch for the sun, we laugh and play, then morning comes, till the light of day, we start in our hearts, it was sunrise, when we made our first love.
It sounds like something, you know, that's playing in the background in Boomerang or something.
Absolutely. You
know? Which one of my favorite movies and soundtrack.
Ever.
I teach that soundtrack. It's so dope.
Fantastic.
But, so that's not a knock, but it is that period, that moment.
Right.
I mean, I think that the Cherish cover is really interesting. I mean, considering how much production control they had over the album, I mean, a tremendous amount as a new band, you have to believe it was deliberate. So I'm curious, too, who decided
on
that.
Whose idea?
I mean, you know, I don't love it. I think,
Fair
you know,
enough.
It sounds like a bad barbecue jam, you know. But I appreciate the effort. You know, they're trying to do some different types of things, and they were curious. I like that.
I mean, maybe it was an attempt to appeal to an older generation, given how youthful everything else was.
Sure. Like,
though, again, why you would pick the Association of All Bands, I don't know. But again, I'm not mad at it. No. So, yeah.
If you were teaching a class on Jodeci and you had to name it after one of the songs on this album, what would you call it?
Love that. Love that.
One of the songs on this album.
Come and talk to me, but read the syllabus first.
Yes, exactly. And then read it again. Yes. I think that's right. Yes.
You know, I asked this of a couple of friends of mine that have younger nieces and nephews, like, how would we explain, you know, like 90s R&B? Because a lot of times the kids are like, 90s R&B is coming back. But they mean a specific 90s R&B. They mean later 90s R&B, not this R&B. Mm-hmm. How would you explain this time of R&B to this generation?
I mean, I think most fundamentally that this was the era of R&B produced by the children of hip hop. That the people who were thinking about and creating the sound already had hip hop in their headphones. And so this is now the merger that we're hearing here. And they were also, because of hip hop, but also because of, you know, being post-war on drugs, post-Reagan, responding in very material ways to the world in which they live. Mm. It was not just going to be about lofty, benign ideas of love. It was going to be about more kinds of you know, material exchanges that people were having with each other. And so, again, that's the influence of hip hop. That's also just being Black in this moment.
Yeah.
So I think it begs then for us to actually listen more and to study more this moment, because I do think it's a pretty stark departure.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering, as someone who is like myself, we're perpetually around people in their late teens and early 20s by the nature of our profession. Do your students listen to this at all? And if so, what do they think of it?
They don't listen to it by choice, as far as I know.
This is the extra credit assignment right here.
Yes. Or, you know, the lecture. So last year I taught a course on rhythm and blues, and I did it with a rough chronology. So I came through this moment, right? Like, what you call R&B has a history that was also in existence at the very moment you were being born, right? So let's think about that moment, the rebellion in 92. Let's listen to what's happening at this moment. And so, you know, I do get a lot of blank faces during the lecture, but there are connections that I'm able to build for them. And, you know, certainly those folks who have stood the test of time, you know, they still are interested in clapping it up for a Toni Braxton, you know, thinking about divas and how so many of them are coming out of this moment, your Mariah Carey's, blah, blah, blah. But as far as, you know, thinking through longer genealogies of boy bands, I don't think this moment really sticks for them. New Edition, maybe.
Sure.
And then on the other side of it, certainly a Boys to Men. But the Jodeci's, you know, the H-Towns, stuff like High Five, they don't really land in the same way. And all three of those are different, in different ways.
Silks.
But Silks. You know, I don't think they're ready for Silk.
No.
No.
Were you listening to Silk?
I was listening to Silk.
Yeah.
Precocious.
Yeah. Being in my bedroom.
Shauna, if you had to describe Forever My Lady in three words, what three words would you choose?
Hard.
Mm.
Close. Mm. Responsive.
Mm. Mm.
Thank you so much for picking this album and for bringing me back to 1991.
Absolutely.
And again, whether you know how old I really am or not, thank you for bringing me back to that time. Thank you for picking this album. If folks want to stay in touch with you, where can they find you?
I have a very long UCLA email address. You can find me online or Twitter at Shauna Redman.
Don't you have your own URL?
I do. DrShaunaRedman.com. It's not particularly up to date, but you can, you know, get at me there as well.
There it is.
And besides, the two books you're working on, when is the first of those going to be done? Or I don't know if I should even ask that.
Yes, Everything Man is out in January.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
Yeah, very exciting.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Hey guys, it's producer Christian here. Just wanted to quickly jump in with a tease for next week's episode. Boyz II Men 2 turned 25 years old this year. So we're going to be rerunning our Feel You episode where we discuss that album.
When Motown Philly dropped that video, I did catch glimpses of that video, you know, not despite not having MTV. And I remember being so like, I got I was being impressed with their style because they had a different kind of style.
They did.
You know, and as somebody who didn't have a lot of style, I think back then, but I was like, look, they were so like, they're really preppy, all gapped out, you know? And I was like, that is my natural state. I was like, they are making this cool, you know? And so that was, to me, was like, I could get with this, you know? And so, you know, visually, they made an impression on me, you know? And in addition to being just like a really hot single, you know?
Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.